Okay. Let's take a look at the two facts about the form and three strong injunctions. Okay, Mimi.
Okay, do you want me to read from the Imul 10?
Yeah, you can, yes, please.
Imul 10, two facts about the form stated, which are true of all forms, and three strong injunctions are given in the following terms. The facts are, one, the form absorbs and uses the waters in which it is immersed. Two, as a result, it grows in strength. The three injunctions are, one, let the magician go on building his form until its adequate potency is assured. Two, then let the outer builders cease from labor. Three, let the inner builders enter on their side.
Yeah, and then the other one, he uses the word inner workers, but it's the same. Okay.
We have seen how, in the process of thought form building, the time came when the form had to be oriented in the right direction and set upon the proper path. In order to carry out its creator's will and purpose, this takes place fairly early in the work, and after the process of orientation, the work of building proceeds. For the thought form is not yet ready for an independent life.
So let's now, in what rule did the process of orientation occur? Or Ruel's orientation? There's a choice. A choice confronts the one who meditates.
Left or right hand palm.
There's that. Then in Rule 8, we don't talk about orientation, we just talk about protecting the magician and where the magician works. But in Rule 9, we do say, let the magician set his form upon the proper path. So that is orientation. Okay, and then the work of the building proceeds because he says, as the waters bathe the form created, they are absorbed and used. The form increases in its strength, let the magician thus continue. So the building process continues, let the magician thus continue until the work suffices. Okay.
There is a true analogy between the gestation period of an infant and that of the thought form. The importance of the right placement of the child within the womb is never overlooked by a good physician, and where there is an analogously, a wrong position upon the path to be followed into manifested existence, death and trouble often ensue.
So what can we mean by a wrong position upon the path to be followed? What do we mean by that?
Is that timing, do
you think? I think it can be part of it. Or I wonder if it has to do with orientation. You know, whether it's alignment of the thought, alignment of the thought form, I wonder.
As you well know, birth is preceded by the breaking of the waters. And before the thought form brings about the desired results on the physical plane, there comes to a similar reaction.
All right, the Neptune phase is coming in. There's a readiness for the thought form to descend into objectivity.
The waters of desire become so potent as to cause precipitation, and to the consequent appearance of the desired form.
So is this analogous to the breaking of the waters? Is that what he's saying? Okay, maybe. Causing precipitation, analogous to breaking of the house divided, blah, blah, precipitation into the etheric physical plane, making the waters stronger and stronger until the right degree of potency is reached. I still am looking at this idea of positioning.
Oh, so
wrong position upon the path to be followed. It's as if the thought form is not rightly oriented to subsequent requirements somehow.
It's like with, okay, he's given us a hint here, because babies, when they're breached, they're sort of upside down, really, to
yes.
giving birth.
Right.
Maybe he's just saying that it's basically it's wrong.
Okay, it's not suited or not suited or prepared for the path
yes.
which it is intended to tread. Somehow, you know, because sometimes you say, well, everything's going smooth and you can go on the path. But sometimes things are out of alignment and you arrive on the path maybe and you just take time to reorient
yes.
yourself. But we still need work on this idea, has to be pondered on. The analogy is clear, but the way it works out, the way a thought form can be in the wrong position.
The thought form has to be directed in itself.
Directed in?
In itself.
In itself.
Yes, the right direction.
Yes, yes.
The child in the wrong.
Yes, and it could be aiming in the wrong direction compared with where the path is. It's almost like you're at the wrong starting gate. You know, in other words, like here you're supposed to go down this path, but in fact you're aimed to go down this one. And so when the starting bell rings, you find yourself you're not prepared. You're not prepared for the path you have to tread. There's something about lack of preparation of the thought form for the path on which it must go.
Maybe the thought form can kill itself, die out, if it's not in full alignment. If
yeah.
the child is not in the right position, the
cord
can go.
Cord wrapped around the neck. Cord around the neck. Okay, death can ensue. It's like, I think wrong positioning means, it just doesn't enter the new dimension in the right way, prepared to go. There's a troubled entrance into the new dimension, and it is damaged or hurt and not prepared to undertake the new task. Damage occurs, or hurt, or death, not prepared for the requirements of the new path. And a time of adjustment would be needed.
What is missing up there, the wrong direction? The word is missing up there.
Yeah, coming, not prepared, prepared for the requirements. Thought form is not in true alignment, cord around the neck, death can ensue, damage occurs or hurt or death, not prepared for the requirements of the new path, time of adjustment would be needed, no smooth entry, maladjustment. So as it would just say, damaged in its power to tread the path. Many corrections. Something of that nature. Okay.
It's much higher, that the word was missing, much higher. Wrong, between wrong and compare.
Wrong. Wrong starting gate.
Yeah.
Wrong compared.
You
could be aiming in the wrong, yeah. Yeah, correction. Well, you know what it is.
Yeah.
Compared with where the path is. Yeah. In other words, this is an interesting word. It's called a false start. You get a good start, you go. You get a false start, you stumble. And it takes time to recover. Time to recover. Okay. I mean, have you ever had the idea of the experience of a rightly positioned thought form or a wrongly oriented thought form? It's almost like Yeah. The thought form is really meant to be applied over here, but somehow you start applying it in the wrong place.
Yes.
You know? You say...
it's like problem solving.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, you'll head off in one direction where really the problem lies
right.
Elsewhere.
Yeah. Starting to apply the thought form in the wrong field, or heading off in the wrong direction. Yeah, so there's a mismatch between the thought form and the field in which it is to be applied.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, you know, yeah, well, there are analogies, but... all right. So, go ahead.
Let us take the facts and analogies as they stand and study them from the standpoint both of the macrocosm and the microcosm. We note that the form absorbs and uses the substance wherein it is immersed. Our solar system is one of many and not the greatest. It constitutes a fragment of a greater whole. This greater whole, formed of seven parts, or seven solar systems, is itself immersed in the waters of space, is born of desire, and therefore a child of necessity.
Son of necessity. This is... okay. It constitutes a fragment of a greater whole. The greater whole, formed of seven parts, or seven solar systems. This is, well, I don't want to get into that part. There is a greater whole, but is a seventh a fragment? That's the question. Because a fragment sounds small, but a part sounds appropriate. This is the old problem of what is a cosmic logos. And a cosmic logos is a being consisting of seven solar systems. But a one about whom naught may be said consists of seven constellations, not seven solar systems. So this has hung up many of us for a long time, but you know, you can just turn to 293 in your Cosmic Fire Book and you can see what is there in terms of fragments and parts. A fragment of a greater whole. Fragment. When you think of a fragment, if you divided something into seven parts, would you call 1/7 a fragment?
No.
I wouldn't. I would call it a part.
Mm.
But if I divided something into 49 parts, I would call 1/49 a fragment.
Mm.
A part has
a
chakra system in itself.
Yes.
I think that's important to think that we are creating some thoughts from, they have to have their own chakra system.
Yes, yes, yes.
And we have to know the right orientation of the system.
Yes, that sounds good. Of course, even if our solar logos is a fragment of something, that fragment does have its own chakra system. It does. Because we know our solar logos has its own chakra system. There are just two greater wholes involved here, and that's the problem. Greater wholes. One consisting of seven solar systems, and another of seven constellations. Some people try to get around this by saying that our solar system is really a constellation and that every one of our planets is really a sun, but I believe that is stretching things too far. they pick up a little hint of that in the Secret Doctrine, where it seems to imply that Mars was once a sun. It's a pretty big fall to come from the status of a solar logos down to a non-sacred planetary logos. So for me, there's a mystery in that. Anyway, on page 293, you see a being called a cosmic logos that does consist of seven solar systems. And this cosmic logos is also immersed in the waters of space. He's born of desire and therefore a child of necessity. How do you explain the idea of a son of necessity or child of necessity? And I've tried to do it this way. If the desire for incarnation is strong enough, then precipitation into incarnation will necessarily, inevitably follow. Sufficient potency of desire produces appearance. It, the greater whole, it draws its life from the surroundings. Streaming into our solar system from all sides, our force currents emanate from what a treatise in cosmic fire calls the one about whom naught may be said. These currents embody his will and desire, express his love or attractive capacity, and manifest as that great thought form we call our system. So the problem to be solved, and I've been working on it for many years, so I don't expect that it will be solved here, is the one about whom naught may be said, a cosmic logos, or greater than the cosmic logos found on page 293. And this is such an important question that groups could split up over this question.
Not this one.
No.
You're safe here.
I trust you won't take it too seriously.
It's interesting that he is calling our solar system for a soft form. It was the last line. That, I think that's again about this chakra system and soft forms.
Yes, yes, right, right, sure. Well said. Look, if our solar system is a thought form, then that thought form has a chakra system. So why should not all thought forms why should not all thought forms have chakra systems? If rightly organized. And down it goes. Is man a thought form?
Yeah.
We are. We are a thought form of the soul, the creator. We have a chakra system too. So all of these naturally occurring beings have chakra systems. Should our creations have chakra systems too? Should they have a drive? Should they know where they're going? Should they be able to articulate themselves? Should they have magnetism? Should they have fire so they can move? Should they be able to reproduce themselves? Should they be anchored? I've just gone through all the seven chakras and asked about those seven qualities in relation to a thought form we might produce. So, you know, that's an interesting idea. When creating a thought form, do we think of its seven chakric necessities? Necessities. We oftentimes think of its purpose, of course.
That's a good one, isn't it?
Do we think of the direction in which it goes? We do. Do we think that it will explain itself, be clear, communicate itself to others? Do we think it is attractive and magnetic?
If it has to have its own life,
yeah.
It has to have the same,
yeah.
Be created over the same model that we are.
Okay, this is good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
To take the analogy further, it has to also be able to eliminate the bits of itself that aren't needed.
Right. Interesting. It definitely has a base of the spine, so it can keep living, you know.
Oh.
And a sacral center would mean that it can replicate itself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you look at this from another perspective, for example, from a business perspective,
right,
and you have a new plan, I think you need to go through the same steps. You say, is this according to the moral in the company or
right.
the strategy or...
Right.
Is it practical, possible to do it? Do we have the resources to do it? How will people feel about it?
Exactly. All those seven rays. Yeah, very interesting. So let's just say also, apply the seven rays to the thought form. Right. Is it viable? Is it exact? Does it harmonize? Yeah, all those things. Is it, yeah, all those things. How will it be accepted, you know, and are there resources, sacral center, are there resources to make it appear, base of the spine center? Sacral center is all about resources.
Maybe we have to create it with a heart center,
mm-hmm.
as a zodiac.
Let's see what these images do. That's good orientation, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
The right-hand heart would be...
Right, rightly positioned. Position the thought form rightly in terms of the context in which it is to appear.
Mm.
All right, we're learning a few things. Go ahead then.
In parenthesis, it is well to note that this existence is termed the one about whom much may be said. Not because of secrecy or mystery, but because all formulation of ideas about his life and purpose are impossible until one has completed the term of evolution in our solar system. Note, I say our solar system, not just our planetary existence.
So, you know, as I say, this group broke up over the one about whom naught may be said, because so many of the members had completed their development in our solar system, and therefore felt qualified to pontificate about the one about whom naught may be said. Or should we call it the one about whom too much has already been said? It was funny in retrospect. Okay.
Speculation about the existence who, through his life, informed seven solar systems is wasted energy. On our planet, only such great lives as the Buddha, the Kumaras, and the planetary Logos are beginning to sense the dynamic impulse of the greater whole. And even they are only sensitive to it, but are as yet utterly unable to conceive of its trend. For it lies beyond mind and love and will. It brings into play factors for which we have no terms and tendencies which are as yet not even remotely visioned on our planet. Well, that says it all, doesn't it?
So it kind of puts things in proportion. But, you know, if you look up... this phrase, one about whom naught may be said, it appears many times in the teaching. He sometimes calls it one of whom naught may be said, one about whom, you know, there are minor variations, but it shows up quite a number of times. And, there is there is the one about whom not will be said, and then there's our solar system and his, our solar logos and his group. So we will need to answer the question, what is the group of our solar logos? Is it the group formed by him and the planets, or is it a group of solar logoi to which he belongs? Well, all of this gets into cosmology and studies that DK promises will be popular in the early part of the next round and will be reduced to textbook form in the later part of the fifth round. So we are certainly justified in studying it excessively.
It's been saying on there, though, now, hasn't it, that the one about whom not may be said is seven solar systems.
Yeah.
But it's got here the solar logos on 293.
293, yeah. Cosmic logos made of seven solar logoi, right? Or seven solar systems. I can go there easily. I'll show you. It's a chart. It's very important. And basically, the cosmic logos consists of seven solar systems, and a solar logos manifests through each solar system. See, a solar system is that part of the solar logos' whole manifestation which is found on the cosmic, etheric, and cosmic physical planes. In other words, very simply, a solar system is found only here on the cosmic, etheric, and cosmic dense physical planes, but the whole energy system of a solar logos embraces all of this. Our solar system is just like his physical body. See? And when you go over here, there is clearly a distinction between a cosmic logos consisting of seven solar systems and an unknown being consisting of seven constellations. Nothing could be clearer in this chart to me. But there are some who will torture this chart, forcing it to say things that I don't think that it says.
Part of those seven constellations, is that the Great Bear? Is that
one of them.
So we know three.
One of the Great Bear, the Pleiades, Orion, Little Bear, maybe Antares. Antares is actually a dual system.
The dragon?
The dragon, definitely, yeah. Dragon.
What is Sirius seen as a system of seven stars? Or?
At least Nicholas and I have thought so. Mm-hmm. And that we ourselves belong to that system. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But from another perspective, because Sirius has Sirius A and Sirius B and even Sirius C, some look upon Sirius as a constellation. Mm-hmm. But look at the word constellation. All it means is the gathering together in ordered form of certain parts. So a solar system is a constellation of planets and its sun. And a constellation conventionally is a gathering together of solar systems. And even a gathering together of seven constellations is a constellation, because you're gathering together in ordered form seven constellations, making a constellation of constellations. So I you know, but what it really means, constel, is stars with each other. Stella is stars. Khan is with. Stars together. That's what constellation means. Okay, well, DK knows the niceties of the English language, so when he wants to blind something, he can. Sometimes he calls our solar system a constellation, and sometimes he calls it just a solar system. And a constellation is a solar system, because it's a system of stars, a solar system. So you can go back and forth with these terms, and DK is purposefully covering them, because he knows what could happen if we get too clear. Okay, let's go on.
We have generated a term we call the ether. Occultly speaking, this is the modern way of expressing the waters of space, which are the waters of desire, in which we are immersed. It is in constant ebb and flux, and is the stream of life constituted of 49 types of energy, which pours through the cosmic egoic lotus, and radiating forth from it, feeds with its measure of sustenance the form, solar, planetary, or human, for which it is responsible.
Well, that is that's quite a statement. The waters of space. See, the word here's the problem. Can the word ether, okay, can the term ether include astral and mental matter? Because he's talking about waters of desire. That's astral energy. Or astral energy, let's call it. Now, on every plane, there is an analogy to the ethers. We could say the higher four subplanes of any plane are for that plane etheric. In other words, the analogy goes that although this is the astral plane, the higher four subplanes are the etheric part of the astral plane. The higher four subplanes here are the etheric part of the mental plane, and on and on and on. So normally, when we study the word etheric, we pretty much think of these four. But DK seems to be expanding the term a little here. We have to see whether he's really doing that. We have generated a term called ether. Occultly speaking, this is the modern way of expressing the waters of space. Well, that's okay. This could mean normal physical ether. But then when he calls them the waters of desire, immediately we start to think about the astral plane. Unless these ethers are so filled with emotional energy, we can call them waters of desire. Remember how the word astral got started? The astral ethers were filled with emotional energy. So then the term astral became associated with emotion. So maybe the same kind of thing is going on here, because to me the waters of space and waters of desire are really two different things. Terminology, of course, can be so confusing. Waters of desire in which it is immersed. But we have been talking about the emotional plane in which the thought form is immersed. So waters of desire, to me, suggest astral energy, not etheric energy. As a matter of fact, we are not yet in the magical part, the last four rules, where we're talking about ether at all in a focal way. But he seems to equate all of these terms, ether, water, desire, and space. And maybe we need some clear distinctions. It is in constant ebb and flux. The waters ebb and flow. And then in a later rule, the web pulsates. The waters ebb and flow, astral, the web pulsates. That's rule 12. It is in constant ebb and flux and is the stream of life constituted of 49 types of energies. Okay, here we go. Now, this means that all 49 energies of the cosmic physical plane are being called ethers. So this is a huge expansion on the term. Everything is being called ether, simply because it's subtle. Which pours through the cosmic egoic lotus. It's even worse than I thought. Constituted of 49 types of energy, it's even worse. Where is the cosmic egoic lotus? There it is. Then how can it be down here if it's pouring through? So maybe the waters of space even include all the cosmic planes. Who would think that so much stuff is hidden here? Yeah. So cosmic egoic lotus and his egoic lotus, maybe the waters of space is a still larger term, including all the energies of all cosmic planes. Chart 5. And radiating forth from it feeds with its measure of sustenance the form, solar, planetary, or human, for which it is responsible. So there's subplanes that are even higher than the cosmic egoic lotus. Wow, this is chart 5. So watch out for a term like ether. Watch out for any term. Because you think it applies to this, then it applies to this, and applies to this, depending on the context. DK, I can only imagine what goes on in his mind to write such stuff. But then, of course, the Treatise on White Magic is an easy book. Right?
Man is immersed in forces which are to him as the waters of space are to our solar system. He finds himself, as does our sun and its attendant planets, forming part of a whole. And just as our system is but one of seven systems drawn together to form the body, or manifested expression of a life, so is the human kingdom, of which he is an infinitesimal part, one of seven kingdoms.
Wow, there's an analogy. An analogy. Wow, I just realized something. So human being, human kingdom, seven kingdoms. Compared to solar logos, seven solar systems, seven times seven solar systems. He's just given a really big hint here. I don't want to lose that hint, so if you'll just excuse me for just a second. I'm going to put it in... What page are we on? Does anybody have any idea?
No.
I don't have any idea where this is.
275.
Is it about 275 sales? Okay, I'll just do it. I'll just say around 275 TWM. You can always find it in the... Soto Logos and the O-M and the Soto Logos, Cosmic Logos, and one about whom not may be said in analogy. With the human being, human kingdom, and seven kingdoms. That's a rather long title. Okay. Every so often I have to give you this because it keeps on growing. I'm always making additions to the AAB extracts, which are, you know, lots of little references out of which you can make many compilations. So we have good compilations now on the Ageless Wisdom compilations and on these little compilations on specific subjects which come out of this huge file. Okay. Just as our... See, he finds himself as does our sun and its attendant planets forming part of the whole. Just as our system, allied to man, is but one of seven systems, allied to seven men, drawn together to form the body of a life, which would be allied to 49. This is a profound analogy. I think it gives a hint.
My age is exactly
on
page
274. Okay. Good. I'll get it down. Thank you.
You wrote around 255.
Mm-hmm. I'll find it.
No, white magic. White magic.
Good. All right, let's go on. These are...
Sorry, where am I?
Just where the black starts.
Okay. When he begins to sense...
Right.
These are the correspondences in life of the planetary logos, the seven solar systems. When he begins to sense the life of the solar logos as it expresses itself through the seven planetary schemes, we will have touched the consciousness of the planetary logos of our special scheme, who is sensing somewhat the united vibrations of the lives of the seven solar logoi.
In other words, the seven solar systems of which ours is one. Not the being that has seven constellations. Well, if we could get this straight, a great hint in the chain would be given. Not the one about whom. Okay. Go ahead.
Bringing the analogy down closer still, the human kingdom itself is an analogous state of consciousness to the human unit through its subjective force existence, and from the standpoint of consciousness provides the waters of space in which a human being thrives and grows.
Okay.
Again, we are met in the fourth kingdom with expressions of the same seven forces, and as man awakens to a recognition of the seven rays or types and begins to work consciously with them, he is taking the first step towards transcending them and controlling them within the sphere of operation. This is now taking place. Knowledge of the seven ray types is beginning to permeate among the thinkers of the race, and this knowledge was in past eons the prerogative of the initiates of the time. Held latent in astrological presentation is that information which will lead disciples to realization and which will put them en rapport with the seven planetary schemes. Real developments in astrology may not be looked for, however, until the new age is really with us and the new orientation achieved.
I think, we'll have some development quite soon, but I think when we finally get into the Mercury phase of Aquarius, it will be a profound development in astrology. That's my guess.
The form of humanity is completed. Its right placement within the womb of matter is the objective of the hierarchy, with all the consequent implications. Note these words.
Uh-huh.
The need at this time is terrific, and the soul is at the birthing in humanity as a whole. Cosmically speaking, the right direction of the forces of the human kingdom is now achieved. There will be manifested on the earth a humanity which will manifest a purpose, a beauty and a form which will be full expressions of an inner spiritual reality and in line with the egoic purpose.
So the right orientation of humanity, the right, how do you say it? The right direction of the forces of the human kingdom. That's the right orientation. Now, how is humanity presently oriented since mid-Atlantean times? We just read it. So they are material selfish orientation at the moment, by and large. Hierarchy strives to bring about a repentance, a turning in another direction. Let's just say, hierarchy seeks for humanity a different alignment with force than is presently existing. To swing humanity around to face the other way. Now, that's often called by the term reversal of the wheel. Yeah. The birthing of the soul and the reappearance of the Christ go together. ROC and the birthing of the soul of the planet. And you see, when you just look at our communication system, how humanity is presently oriented. Toward what? Toward
selfish materialism.
Yeah.
The left-hand path.
Matter, getting, fulfilling the instinctual needs, or oriented to the astral plane for in the desire for relief, reward in heaven. That's an orientation too of many millions. Christians, Muslims, paradise, heaven, it's an orientation. The world has nothing for me, but I and people like me am going to heaven. How many are oriented towards rebuilding the world along the lines of welfare for all humanity? That's a United Nations orientation, at least ideally, it has slipped badly. So what can we conclude here? Let's just see, can we conclude that the fetus, which is the human kingdom, is not presently rightly oriented compared in relation to the energies which are about to descend? And I wonder if all of the trouble we're going to go through now and are going through is part of the reorientation and repositioning of the human kingdom. Do you think so? Reorientation of the human kingdom. Now, Gisela, say a little more about that Saturn in Libra position.
It's a very interesting position indeed, because it's elevated in that position, and when it functions properly, it will cause the higher self to implement in the lower self on three different areas. The universal law will implement itself. The universal love will implement itself as right human relations. And the intelligence aspect will implement itself as balance in the economy. And that's exactly what is happening. We have all these three aspects playing its part today in the very front of our eyes.
Yeah. There's a strong pull for international law at this time.
Yeah, the financial sector is
That's where we're feeling it first.
Yes.
Feeling it first there.
Yeah.
The money part, the Uranian part actually, although you can't exclude Saturn, but he gives he gives law to Saturn, sex or love to Venus, and Uranus, the other ruler, is considered the money part. I think, as I recall. So anyway, and also Saturn in Libra gives you a chance to reverse things. It is analogous to the reversal of the wheel. Okay, so we get the analogies here. It's very clear, in a way, like this. We are preparing for the birth initiation, but in order for this to happen, humanity, the fetus, must be rightly oriented. So we have not yet reached birth. In other words, the ROC is the first initiation, and it has not occurred. And the birth process is dangerous. If the orientation of the fetus is incorrect, could be damage and death to the mother and or the fetus. Yeah, could be. Not, it wouldn't be an abortion of the kind where there's an interference, but it could be an aborted birth. It could end badly. End badly. So the analogy is very clear. And
it gives the hint that if it takes too long as well, because
exactly.
You know, anything, a birth that takes too long,
there
death, right?
Will be, what's the name of that syndrome? Toxic something syndrome. It involves the liver, it involves bile, it involves the poisoning of the fetus by staying too long. Is it toxic death syndrome? I'm not sure. It's something bad. But they oftentimes have to induce labor because the toxicity is rising. And the fetus and mother can die.
In India, we just call it toxemia.
Toxemia. Yeah, kind of in general term.
Yeah.
And it can happen fast. So I wonder what induced labor would be like. The rapid return of the Christ ahead of schedule? Is that what induced labor would be like? Earlier reappearance?
But sudden Libra is trying to straighten up humanity so that when it enters Scorpio, we are more able to respond to the soul. Mm. And it imposes laws in many different fields of society today. Mm. And perhaps.
Look at.
I was thinking about these laws, you know, in our country, which will affect everybody. Laws restraining the banking industry.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, with Uranus and Pisces, it was like a last chance for health care reform. Mm-hmm. In our country, anyway.
But what we are really talking about in the human kingdom, it is energy and forces transference from one chakra system to another.
Yes. Yes.
The right relation of the chakra system.
Okay, so balancing of the chakra systems too. Of chakra system. Well, I think, you know, Saturn in Libra is such a financial indicator.
It's both the third.
Third and first ray.
Tax, aren't they, for bankers? I forget what it's called now. And this is a worldwide movement, isn't it?
And the budget discipline. Which is, enforced to almost any country in Europe these days. This is part of the story.
Okay.
Other eventualities can be sensed as sadly possible, but these will not consider flourishes the. We will not consider flourishes the hope and the belief of the watching brothers that men will transcend all undesirable eventualities and make the goal.
Hmm.
One word here and one hint. The hierarchy of the planet constitutes symbolically the head center of humanity, and their forces constitute the brain forces. On the physical plane are a large band of aspirants, probationary disciples and accepted disciples who are seeking to be responsive to the head center. Some consciously, others unconsciously. They are gathered from all fields of expression, but are all creative in some way or another, or other. They, in their turn, constitute what might be symbolically called the pineal gland of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
As in individual man, this is usually dormant and asleep. So, in humanity, this group of cells within the brain of the body, within the brain of the body corporate, is dormant. But thrilling to the vibrations of the head center, the occult hierarchy.
Let's pause for a minute. So, these potentially dormant, these potentially active cells are now dormant, but thrilling. So the pineal gland of humanity is waking up in response to the head center. And we've been studying this as part of the magical process with this circle of life, which is the egoic lotus sending down the energy through the head and into the pineal gland. So the analogy is that some human beings who are very physical, they're not yet in the cosmic ethers, they are waking up, because the gland itself is dense physical and the hierarchy by comparison is not dense physical. The hierarchy is cosmic etheric, and the awakening disciples are dense physical, but stimulating.
Air and warm and then
condensation.
Did you say condensation?
It is where land, water, and air is moving.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
Right. So, all this relates to the midway spot, where or when land and water and air meet. Some of the cells are awake.
Let them intensify their endeavor and so awaken others.
Mm-hmm.
The pioneers of the human family, scientists, thinkers, and artists constitute the pituitary body.
Okay. That's more, should we say, in this way, more related to the concrete mind and not so much to the soul. Go ahead.
They express the concrete mind but lack that intuitive perception and idealism which would place them, symbolically speaking, in the pineal gland.
Isn't that interesting? That idealism is included as well.
They are, nevertheless, brilliant, expressive, and investigating. The objective of the hierarchy, again, symbolically speaking, is to make the pineal gland so potent and, therefore, so attractive that the pituitary body of the cell lives. No, the pituitary body of the cell lives may be stimulated, and thus a close interplay be brought about.
So we have this Gemini light of interplay. We have Mercury between the two glands. And we have the dotted line. Those on top, somewhat soul conscious, those underneath the dotted line, intelligent but not soul conscious, and we have the interplay bridging across the dotted line from the top of the personality to the bottom of the soul. Know what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
It's clear in the mind? Okay, go ahead.
This will lead to such potent action that there will be a streaming forth of new cells to the pineal gland.
Okay.
And at the same time, such a strong reaction set up that the entire body will be affected, resulting in the streaming upward of many stimulated lives to take the places of those who are finding their way into the center of the hierarchical endeavor.
So the whole body, with all centers and glands, is affected. But we are speaking mostly physical. In other words, human beings are like cells in different parts of the body. And nature abhors a vacuum. So from the pituitary to the pineal creates a vacuum. It has to be filled. It's this updraft of lesser cells rising into new positions as they are vacated, correct? The vacating of new positions and the upward movement to fill those positions. Nature abhors a vacuum. Okay.
Reorientation and reversal of tendencies is progressing, are in a state of violent turmoil.
So now he's down low again. Now he is is not on cosmic planes. He's speaking of ethers and of astral energies. Go ahead.
The vortex of conflicting desire in which men find themselves is now chaotic and so potent that these waters are stirred to the very depths.
Uh-huh. Meaning
students
that even the sixth and seventh subplanes of the astral plane are also stirred up. And so we find in the movies, all of these horror movies coming up, ghastly, horrible things, because the lower hell area is also churning and coming into people's minds.
Students of modern history and of social order are faced with an unprecedented condition corresponding in the corporate body of humanity to that upheaval in the life of an individual aspirant which always precedes the passing on to the path of discipleship.
Now, does he mean here the path of probationary discipleship, or does he mean discipleship as the first initiation? Because that's when real discipleship begins. But anyway, it's that old Pluto-Vulcan upheaval. What does upheaval mean? Upheaval.
Mm.
Something low
pushed up
is brought up.
Mm.
And it's just like turning everything, you know, churning all the sediment and everything at the bottom. That too, it heaves up from the bottom and comes to the top. Heave means to throw up and out. Okay.
Hence, there is no cause for depression or undue anxiety.
But just a little bit. You can have not undue, but you can have a little bit of anxiety. It's okay.
But only ardent desire that the transition may be made in due time and order, and be neither too rapid, hence destructive to all right ties and affiliations, nor too prolonged, and so strained beyond endurance, the sorely tried fabric of humanity.
At one point he said, World War II must not go on too long, or humanity would become, really unable to bear it, or worn out, totally defeated through fatigue. Okay, sorry.
All new manifestations in all kingdoms, in all ages, must come slowly and therefore safely to the birthing. All new forms, if they are ultimately to carry weight and gather adequate momentum to carry them through their life cycle, must be built in silent subjectivity in order that the building may be strong and sure and near the contact with the Creator, human or divine, and true conformity to the pattern may be substantial and unbreakable. This is true of a universe, a kingdom in nature, or a thought form created by a human thing.
So they are eager. The new must not break too rapidly into its new environment. So Ray 4, he is involved in retarding the premature forcing of the new on the old. I'm thinking about some of these social leaders. I'm thinking about what they did in Cambodia. They went to school in France. They decided we're going to have a new culture and civilization in Cambodia. They went back and forced it on everyone, and with disastrous results. Not that it was good in the first place, but their method was absolute imposition. The Khmer Rouge, you know? K-H-Y, Khmer Rouge. Forcing rapidly the so-called new upon the old. So DK is all for a careful process of birthing. And here we go.
But I think they were the old order anyway, because they were against education and, weren't they?
Yeah, they were even worse than the old order.
Yes, raising the peasants and, yeah.
So
In Afghanistan, they also tried to democracy and then...
Yeah, exactly. Democracy and Islam are incompatible, so the saying goes. The careful process of birthing means not too soon must the ROC occur. Because there's a waiting thing here due to the impact of the energy, so there must be a readiness, but not too long either, or poison. Wow. What a balancing act, Saturn and Libra. But it's more than Saturn and Libra. It's Saturn in the planetary horoscope getting stronger and stronger, DK tells us. So, yes.
Perhaps especially now when Pluto is in Capricorn.
Yeah.
The emphasis on Saturn is stronger.
It's stronger. Because Pluto is squaring.
Oh, because Pluto is in...
Saturn's sign. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Now, of course, remember, this is written in the early 30s, 80 years ago. I sometimes forget that, and I'm reading it like it's a commentary on what's going on right now, which it just about is.
In all form building, the technique of construction remains basically the same, and the rules of the realizations may be summed up in the following aphoristic phrases. Let the creator know himself to be the builder, and not the building. Let him desist from dealing with the raw material on the physical plane, and let him study the pattern and the blueprints, acting as the agent of the divine mind. Let him use two energies and work with three laws. These are the dynamic energy of purpose, conforming to the plan, and the magnetic energy of desire, drawing the builders to the center of endeavor.
This is interesting. Because now desire is drawing to the center, and does that mean that will is impressing outward? It seems to be the opposite of what he said earlier. Is this the opposite of what was earlier said? But anyway, the dynamic energy of purpose and the magnetic energy of desire.
Let these three laws hold sway. The law of synthetic limitation, of vibratory interplay, and of active precipitation.
Mm-hmm.
The one concerns the life, the second concerns the building, and the third produces manifested existence.
Well, it's fantastic that we get another description of the three aspects. These. The law of vibratory synthetic limitation, first aspect, vibratory interplay, so Geminian, second aspect, and of active precipitation, the third aspect. So that covers the whole white magical process. We limit what is trying to precipitate. There is a vibratory interplay of this form with its environment, and finally the etheric physical appearance. Okay?
Let him deal first with the outer builders, sending his call to the periphery of his circle of influence. letting set the waters of living substance in motion by his idea and impulse, bending the builders to his purpose and plan. Let him build with judgment and with skill, preserving always the stool of the director and coming not down into close contact with his thought form. Let him project in time and space his form through visualization, meditation, and skill in action, and so produce that which his will commands, his love desires, and his need creates. Let him withdraw the builders of the outer form, and let the inner builders of dynamic force push it forth into manifestation.
So now we have, first time, the definition of the inner builders and what they do. He left us in Cosmic Fire only talking about the outer builders and did not give us the function of the inner builders. And in this particular case, are these inner builders or workers pushing from the astral plane onto the etheric plane, or from the etheric plane, no, I got that wrong, etheric plane onto the dense physical. Anyway, they're pushing from a present state or dimension into something lower. And manifestation can mean the dense physical, but it can also mean etheric. That is also a form of manifestation. But I have a feeling that we will have to connect them with the etheric pushing into the dense physical. We will see.
You're talking about the birth, and it has supposed to be from the etheric plane to the dense physical. So the birth has taken place a long time before.
Yes, the only, it's correct, but the thing is we're still dealing with rules for the astral plane, and there's still one more rule for the astral plane, unless he's just anticipating what will happen. See what I'm saying? So let's keep our eyes open on that. I understand your reasoning, and I think it's correct, but because manifestation generally means what appears, generally. But we're still on the astral plane, and unless he's talking about something that happens later, and just, you know, while he's in the astral discussion, he mentions something that happens later, maybe. Maybe that's what it is. Go ahead.
Through the eye of the Creator are these inner builders brought to functioning, directed action. Through the word of the Creator were the outer builders guided. Through the ear of the Creator, the volume of the greater word vibrates through the waters of space.
Whoa. So the inner builders are brought into functioning by the eye. Okay. By the eye. And not so for the outer builders. There, the word or the throat center does that. So third aspect, second aspect, and through the ear of the Creator, the volume of the great word vibrates through the waters of space, although the ear seems passive. The ear doesn't make anything happen. But he learns that the work suffices. Let him thus continue until the work suffices, and he hears when it is so. So he learns when the work has sufficed by hearing a sound. Go ahead.
Let him remember the order of creative work. The waters of space respond to the work. The builders build. The cycle of creation ends and the form is adequate in manifestation. The cycle of performance succeeds and depends for its duration on the potency of the inner builders who constitute the subjective form and transmit the vitalizing life.
So, here it sounds like Agni Chaitanya's. Here, the inner builder's sound etheric. Sound etheric. In other words, they are inner to the outer, dense, physical, that's divine plan, dense physical manifestation. Okay, this whole thing is a fantastic summary. Really wonderful.
So the inner builder brings life to the cells?
The inner builder seems to push the form out and vitalize it, and according to how much vitality they give it, it will the work of the form in matter will last. So in other words, once that form is out there, it's got to perform. But how much oomph it's been given will determine how well it succeeds in the outer world. This is what I'm getting. It's the vitality with which it has been imbued. We all know that...
So without the lesser builders, there would be no vitality, but there would still be life.
Well, the lesser builders create the emotional form in which the thought form is embedded. So now you've got a mental emotional form. And I think the inner builders now seem to vitalize it, give it more life, and maybe push it forth into manifestation, determining how well it will perform. That's what I'm getting from this. What do you think?
The directing eye, this is about the will, about the life aspect, and the vitalizing of the inner. The eye was
directing
the inner
workers. Yeah. Yeah. But inner doesn't necessarily mean astral.
No.
That's the interesting thing. The inner workers is another term. Earlier in the rule, he says the inner workers begin their cycle. And it follows upon the outer builders. And so inner and outer seem a little bit reversed to me, because the inner workers seem to have more to do with vitalizing the form downward, and the outer builders seem to be creating the construction. In other words, look, it appears that outer builders finish the form. Inner workers vitalize the form and push it into manifestation, and the degree of vitality they give determines the performance of the form which has been manifested. So far, this is what I get.
And when a man dies, the inner builders are withdrawn.
Well, if they are, he actually discusses that. He talks about how the vitality of life reverses itself at certain stages, and how it spends itself, and if the vitalizing power of these builders is reduced, the man will die. So, this is a withdrawal. But the question is, how long do these inner builders keep building? Do they keep the man in a state of vitality all through his life? Are they active after he is out there performing? I don't know about that yet, but it seems that they could be. And then they begin to reduce their vitalization. And as they reduce the vitalization, the form begins to subside. So what you are suggesting could be the case. We have to know how long the inner workers keep working. Also, after the manifestation and during the performance of the form, that's what we want to know. I wish I could trace right now his description of how it's in Cosmic Fire again, how vitality works in the form that has been born. How strong it is in the beginning, how it reaches a peak, how it begins to wane and fade out, and probably certain etheric devas are involved in sustaining the form and in also letting it subside. I think if I looked up the word vitality, or some sort of compilation on that, we would get it. But I can't remember how to get to that, although I did make a... I wonder how many vitality...
It's supposed to do with life, isn't it? Vitality? Life?
Let's see how... Well, life will just give me a superabundance. Let's just see what I've got here. And if it's up near the top, I might catch it. No. That's not enough. Vitality. Life will just be over the top. Vitalization. Vitality. I can't find that right now, but I give you the gist of it. There is a peak of vitality in life. It keeps climbing up to a certain point, and then it wanes. Now the question is, why does it wane? And what kind of builders, are they stopping their building? That's it. It's related to building. Building, yeah.
But inner builders are not the same as living cells?
No, they are etheric. Living cells are physical. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But can it be the key energy you have with you from your kidney? You have a portion of key energy.
I see.
And a point you have to... Then it's used up if you don't...
Yeah, it is related. Chi or ki is related to the base of the spine center. And that is etheric. Okay, let's see. Builders. Let's see. Well, I'm sure I made an extract from it, but unfortunately, I don't remember how I did it. So I can try to find it. But it definitely tells how vitality increases and decreases. And vitality is ki, prana. Mm-hmm. It's related to the base of the spine center, which tells you how long you remain in incarnation. Because the base of the spine center keeps you in incarnation, and if its energy begins to wane, it's an etheric process. Etheric. And it's timed. It's timed.
You can visualize the forms if we are repeating the process.
Mm-hmm. Mm, right.
The elements want to do what they is used to do. So they will be happy to tell you and visualize.
Yeah, if we don't give life to it, they may just... If they say, the eye. Take your eye off it and your form falls apart. But on the other hand, once you release the form in the magical process, you shouldn't always have to be feeding it. It should be able to feed itself for a while. So anyway, let me put this down. I've got to find out where I was. Sorry. I seem to be lost. Okay. Meditation for... Did I just... Oh, here it is. This is it. Okay, so the eye. When the eye is removed, the building process stops sustaining, no longer sustains the integrity of the form. So the eye feeds. But it must not go on forever. Because there'd be no sense to make a form send it out on its path and always have to keep your eye on it. I think after a while it can be released to do its own thing.
He says that though about being the director of down with the builders or something. I forget now.
Right, direct it and use the eye.
Yes.
But the eye does vitalize. And the question is, how long must the director, I'll give you an analogy, keep his eye on the show? Okay, the director works with the show, gets it great, every night, every day, till it's just right. And now, go off on the road and play all the different cities, but the director stays home because the show runs itself. See how that works? So I think in the magical process, there is a point at which the creator, having done everything he can, no longer has to keep on feeding it. Imagine, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony has been played 10,000 times all over the world. It has sustained itself. Has Beethoven had to keep his eye on it over two centuries to make sure it does its job? But in the beginning, he had to. So there has to come a time when the director, having done all, can release his form so that it can sustain itself. And not only that, if it is beautiful and very attractive, it will in itself, you know what I'm going to say, attract the sustaining energy.
Then he is grown up.
Yeah.
Yes. Every child, you have to keep your eye on the child and feed it.
All right. Every child must be grown up. But there is a timing. And there may come a time when even Beethoven's Fifth Symphony is no longer played. Everything may move on. It may have its lifespan. It may have a tremendous lifespan. But built into it is some, when it's no longer fed by the consciousness of humanity, it will fade into obscurity.
It's a bit like medieval music, isn't it? It's only for the very few.
Occasionally there's a revival.
Yes.
Old works which have faded into obscurity are revived by people who have an interest in them, maybe the reincarnation of the composer.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, these analogies are interesting, but I'll try to find that thing about how vitality peaks and ebbs in the life, how it builds up to birth and then starts increasing and fades away, and why it fades away. Okay, go ahead.
That energy, is that elementals or little devas or?
We're talking about etheric devas.
Wait, what?
Etheric devas.
Yeah.
Etheric. Yeah. Vitality is etheric devas. Prana and the etheric devas. So these are all in the realm of physicality, the etheric part, the energy part of the physical plane. That's we're talking about the vitality of any living thought form. How vital is it?
Yeah.
And there's something about the way it's prepared that determines whether it will perform in a vital way or just be weak when it comes into manifestation and just fade out right away.
But the cells are lives in themselves, aren't they?
The cells are aggregations of matter around. The life of a cell is not the matter of the cell. The life of the cell is the etheric structure that organizes the matter to make the physical cell. There is no coherent life. There is no form life in matter per se. Yes, but it's not the physical atom itself.
No.
The life is the ether. Remember, physical matter is not a principle. So it's just blind elemental stuff that has to be gathered around the true form. And the true form is the etheric form. And that's alive. That's the life. And the livingness that the physical form seems to show is the etheric vitality pouring into and around the matter from the etheric plane. Withdraw the prana and the cell dies. And it all falls apart and matter goes back to where it was. Okay, Gohan.
Remember that the cessation of the form ensues when purpose is achieved, or when impotency of will produces failure of functioning in the cycle of performance.
All right, well, that's well said. So, purpose achieved, no more desire, fade out, or when I don't have a strong enough will to see the form through in its performance. Now, you could say, well, let's forget the magical process for a minute. If there's an executive or a director of an organization, and that director fails in will, the organization will also fail in performance. That's just normal. Okay.
Students would do well to study these cycles of creative building, of performance and of subsequent disintegration.
It's such an important word, performance. In other words, what is performance? The outer working of the inner idea through form over time. Performance means through form. The idea is born, the thought is born, and now it keeps on working through form for a time. Okay.
They are true of a solar system, of a human being, and of the thought forms of a creative thinker. The secret of all beauty lies in the right functioning of these cycles. The secret of all success on the physical plane lays in right understanding of law and of order. For the aspirant, the goal of his endeavor is the correct building of forms in mental matter, remembering that as a man thinketh, so is he. That for him, the control of mental substance and its use in clear thinking is an essential program.
So we would say, not yet full magical process, but at least build mental forms correctly and carry them out.
This will demonstrate an organization of the outer life in creative work of some kind, a book written, a picture painted, a home functioning rhythmically, a business run along sound and true lines, a life salvaged, and the outer dharma carried out with precision, whilst the inner adjustments proceed in silence with the heart.
So it's very beautiful. This is the successful aspirant's life. And all through right thought form building, and then carrying out the implications of the form built. So it's not magic, but it depends upon the first phase of magic, which is right thought form building.
For the disciple, the work extends. For him, there has to be realization of the group plan and purpose, and not simply of his own individual spiritual problem. There has to be conformity to the purpose for his immediate cycle and life period, the subordinating of his personal dharma and ideas to the need and service of that cycle. For him, there has to be that attainment of knowledge, of strength, and of coordination between the personal self and the soul, which will result in ability to build organized forms and groups on the physical plane and to hold them coherently together. This he does not through the force of his own character and equipment, but because that character and equipment enable him to act as a transmitter of the greater life energies and to serve as an efficient cooperator with a plan of which he can only vision a fragment. He works, however, faithfully at the building of his aspect of the great plan and finds one day when the building is completed and he sees the whole, that he has built true to design and in conformity with the blueprints as they have been carried in the minds of the architects, the elder brothers, who in their turn are in touch with the mind of the one existence.
Marvelous summary of what it means for the disciple to do this kind of work.
The practical application of these truths is of utmost importance. There is no life so circumscribed and no person so situated who cannot begin to work intelligently and to build thought forms under law with understanding and with understanding. There is no day in any man's life, particularly if he is an aspirant or a disciple, when a man cannot work in mental matter, control his use of thought, watch the effect of his mental processes on those he contacts, and so handle his chitta or mind stuff, as Patanjali calls it, that he becomes more and more useful.
Well, it's very practical book, and I think we see what we have to do. I was very interested to see that it's not the force of the disciple's character which makes him successful, but the fact that the character is a magnet to enable him to transmit the greater life energies which are coming, which are making him a cooperator with a plan that he cannot fully vision. But he tries to build true to the inner design as it is conceived by the masters who in their turn are in touch with the one existence. So there's a more impersonal work, a more decentralized work in the life of the disciple. As the waters bathe the form created, they are absorbed and used. The form increases in its strength. Let the magician thus continue until the work suffices. Let the outer builders cease their labors then, and let the inner workers enter on their cycle, bringing the form into manifestation. We have one more rule to deal with of the emotional rules, and I think we will have time to do that tomorrow, I trust. There still remains another 140 pages in Rule 10, but okay. We've done what we can do. What page, how far did we get in Rule 10? Does anybody know the page number?
Not long ago, we had 277 up there.
277.
281.
281. Actually, I underestimated what I just said. 281. Okay. And Rule 10 goes to 443. It begins at 273 and goes to 443. It's 170 pages long. We could have a whole two seminars on Rule 10. But there are many things in it, you know, which are not directly part of the magical process. He takes some detours, and he gives us a whole section here on the founding of the hierarchy. And he talks about Esoteric Astrology and the New Group of World Servers seems to be a book in itself. So I just took that part of Rule 10, which I saw. But I would suggest page 278 reviewing the following aphoristic phrases. Basically, it goes from 278 to 279. It's such good advice. Very clear. From 278 to 279. Okay. Let's just have the mantra of the New Group of World Servers. And we'll use the word we. The lives of all who seek to aid the great ones. May we fulfill our part in the one work through self-forgetfulness, harmlessness, and right speech. Okay. You're getting off 5 minutes early. I hope there's a deep sense of appreciation for that. And a realization that you owe me.